Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come on.
Happy Friday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour black hole block party. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Honolulu to Houston, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. Hey, you're on the air.
But they listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live for the Quicken Loans Studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How are we doing, everybody? Thanks so much for joining us. Glad that you decided to make some time for us this fine Friday morning. Coming up this morning and this hour, how about one of the members of Race Car Driving's First Family? Indy 500, of course, this weekend. John Andretti will join us here on the program coming up in about 35 minutes from now. He's got an extraordinary story. We'll talk to John Andretti and discuss the Indy 500 coming up and the legacy of his family in about 35 minutes from now. So much on the NBA playoffs. Tonight, LeBron, home game, staving off elimination. Will this be the final time the home crowd gets a serenade? The King? We'll talk about the NFL, new details coming out about how they arrived at the decision of the new national anthem policy. And, of course, last night's thriller, again, Game 5, Western Conference Finals. It's all on the docket, all on the table. Hit us up on all of that at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. And as always, you can watch the show. Watch us at watchda.com. Last night, Game 5. After losing at home at Oracle in Oakland, one would have expected last night for the Golden State Warriors to rise to the occasion. This is a 2-time champion. Have been to the NBA Finals 3 times in a row. Golden State appears to be fully loaded, fully healthy, fully locked. After losing Game 4, you had to feel like last night we were going to get an elite Golden State performance. A focused, aggressive, driven, motivated, cutthroat performance from the Warriors. And it was anything but. Anything but. The Houston Rockets made the Golden State Warriors look skittish, look out of sorts, look nervous. And it is so rare to see the Warriors look like that. Because they're always seemingly in control. They're always the aggressor. They always are the bully. And guys, for the first time in 2 years, for the first time since they got Kevin Durant, not only are the Warriors not the bullies, they're being bullied mentally. You can just see it in body language. You can see it in possessions. You can see it in shot attempts. They do not look in control. And so much of this is a credit to the Rockets, because so many opponents have faced off against the Warriors over the last 2 years and been beaten by the time they hit the floor, by the time the ball is tossed up. They are beaten at tip-off, going, how are we going to take down that team? You can't take down that team. How many Hall of Famers do they have? And they added Kevin Durant? You can't beat that team. And the moment things go badly for an opponent against the Warriors, the opponent always shrinks. And the exact opposite has happened for the Houston Rockets. They have risen to the occasion. They have been the bullies. They have been the aggressors. And they have knocked the Warriors off of their spot. And I was listening and watching Steve Kerr's post-game press conference last night. And I really wanted to see how he was feeling and what his temperature was following a loss where now they trail 3-2.5 to win both 6 and 7 to get to their manifest destiny, which we always assumed was going to be the NBA Finals and win an NBA championship. And Steve Kerr said something that immediately my ears perked up. Bing! I was on the couch with a bourbon bell. I'm watching this and I go, did you hear what he just said? Steve Kerr is playing reverse psychology on his team because his team is mentally fragile. It is where we begin. It's your cold open.
98-94 Houston. 2.4 to go in game 5. They go to Thompson, throws it up at the horn. No good, and it's over. The Houston Rockets have survived game 5 and are now one win away from the NBA Finals.
I feel great about where we are right now. And that may sound crazy, but I feel it. I know exactly what I'm seeing out there. And we defended them beautifully tonight. We got everything we needed. Just too many turnovers, too many reaches. And if we settle down a little bit, we're going to be in really good shape.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That told me all I needed to know. That was Craig Ackerman on Rockets Radio. That, of course, was Kerr after the game. I feel great about where we're at. I feel great about where we're at. I feel great about where we're at. Think about that for a second. A head coach of a team that has just lost back-to-back games for the first time in 2 years has to win a game 6 and a game 7, and one of the greatest offenses ever put together have been held under 100 points 2 games in a row. And their late game situations, their fourth quarter possessions, their last second possessions, they've got a ball kicking off of Draymond Green's knee. They've got missed three-pointers. The final possession 2 games ago where Klay Thompson has no space, doesn't know what to do, and kind of chucks it up. Kevin Durant being a disaster in the fourth quarter of these last 2 games. The head coach says, I feel great about where we're at. Why would he say that? He would say that because the Warriors do not handle adversity well. The Warriors are the best bullies in basketball, which is why I always call Draymond Green a fake tough guy. Because Draymond Green's a really loud trash talker and gets in your face and is brash and obnoxious when he knows, because he knows, you can't fight him. It's not an NBA that fights anymore. If this was 1992 and Xavier McDaniel or Charles Oakley or Anthony Mason or Rick Mahorn or Bill Laimbeer or any number of guys that would swing, take a swing and say, okay, let's go, you become a lot quieter. The Warriors have always worn the armor of arrogance, and it has worked to their benefit. Don't get me wrong, you've won 2 championships, you are on the verge of a third. It has worked. The veil, the armor of overconfidence. And look, there's been a reason. They're extremely talented. when they play as a unit with fluidity, with determination, with focus, they are one of the most beautiful basketball creations. When their shooting is on from deep, it is unlike anything we've ever seen in basketball history. But when that armor is taken off, they don't handle it well. They did not handle it well in the NBA Finals against LeBron. They are not handling it now. The Rockets have taken the fight to them. They've closed airspace. They've shuffled the deck. They've answered the bell. When the Warriors think that they're going to go off and run away, the Rockets have closed, and they're not used to life not being easy. And I've compared the Warriors to trust fund kids or billionaires. Life is so easy that when there's a little bit of adversity, they don't know how to handle it. And this is what you're seeing. And that's why Steve Kerr says, I feel great about where we're at. I feel great. He feels great. He feels great because that team gets in its own head. It's not a mentally tough team. It's great because it's great talent-wise. But adversity, Warriors don't do adversity well. Think about their arc. The Warriors kind of building something with Mark Jackson. They've drafted a bunch of good young players, but no expectations. And Mark Jackson starts turning the culture around, and finally they become slight winners. But again, no expectations on winning a championship. Steve Kerr takes over the job, and suddenly the thing explodes, and they're in the NBA Finals, and they're playing a Cavaliers team that has no Kyrie Irving and no Kevin Love for most of the series. Nice! And they win the NBA championship in six games, and suddenly this Warriors team has arrived, and Steph Curry is an MVP, and everybody is giving Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston all of this love. Wow, look at this team. They're exciting, they're young, they're fun, and they've won a championship. It's all happened so quickly for them. The next year, they win 73 regular season games. By year two of their career together, essentially, where there's some expectations, they have broken the single season mark for wins. It came so easy for them. And yes, they were down 3-1 against Oklahoma City. And yes, they did have to rebound. And that's where they showed their best resiliency as a team ever. Ever. That was the one moment where they did face adversity and they did come back from it. But we follow that up with the NBA Finals where they go up 3-1. And again, it's so easy. We're going to win another championship. But every step along the way, game 5, game 6, game 7, Draymond Green getting kicked out of the series, they didn't handle those expectations well at all. And you saw them absolutely crushed from a spiritual and soul standpoint because they were convinced they were going to win a championship all season long. It was, again, as I mentioned, their manifest destiny. They come back and they convince Draymond Green, or Draymond Green convinced Kevin Durant to come. And then last year, it's not even a season. We know that they're not only going to win, but they're going to win by huge lengths. They don't lose a game until the NBA Finals. So Kevin Durant, it's nice. I mean, he came up big in the NBA Finals, but they're playing from ahead the entire time. They come into this season, they're not even interested in the number one seed. They're not even interested in the number one seed. So they get the number two seed, and everybody says, who cares? Houston doesn't have the guts to do it. They blow through the first two rounds of this playoffs. They don't know adversity, and now they're handling it, or they're trying to handle it, and they're not handling it well. The Warriors are maybe the most talented team in NBA history. If they're not, they're in the conversation with the 96 Bulls and the 84 or the 86 Celtics and the 87 Lakers, and I mean, they are that type of talented team, but all those teams had this grit, had this ability to fight through when things were poor because they had equals. Because the regular season, the postseason, they were steeled by equals, and this Warriors team doesn't have one, and so they don't know how to handle being punched in the mouth, and it's happening right now. And I couldn't be more impressed with the Rockets for doing it this way. Because nobody expected that they were going to be the team that was able to do it and land that blow. But when Steve Kerr says, I feel great about where we're at, he knows. Steph is going to doubt himself. Kevin Durant has always been not great in terms of centering himself in times that are dire. Draymond Green is emotionally all over the place. He knows that this right now is a very delicate mental place that his team is in. 855-212-4CBS, the phone number. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. Your thoughts on last night's game number 5. The Rockets have pushed the Warriors to the brink of elimination. Also, when we come back, tonight is a game 6 where the Cavaliers will try to extend their season. Is LeBron about to go off? Some incredible stats about that next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Make the right game plan for you. Farmers Insurance has practical insurance knowledge gained from more than 89 years of experience. Find an agent at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
It's a Target Demo Friday, everybody. So remember to get to Facebook or Twitter and let us know what you're doing as you listen to the show. And we'll get your Target Demo Fridays read by the end of the show. That's Facebook.com/TheDAShow or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Welcome back. DA with you, CBS Sports Radio. Ask the Pros today, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Check out CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio or my handle at DA on CBS. And think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We're talking a lot about the Warriors and Rockets game last night. Houston does another number defensively on Golden State, holding them to just 94 points last night. Tonight, Celtics and Cavaliers game 6 from Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. How about this stat? LeBron has played 21 playoff elimination games. With a loss, you go home. 21 of those. LeBron loses, he goes home. Statistically speaking, he is the greatest player ever in those situations. Not only is he above 500, he is 12-9 in those 21 elimination games. He has averaged in those games 33-11-7. Let that sink in. When he has had to win a basketball game or else his season is over, he is 33-10-7. Really 33-10.8-7. So 33.5 points per game, 11 rebounds, and 7 assists. He shoots 57% on those dates. So you think tonight we might have a big LeBron night? Yeah, the biggest LeBron night. In games where he is facing elimination of the playoffs, all time, he has won 12 of those 21 games and averaged 33-11-7 on 57% shooting. He averages 2 points more per game in those elimination games than the next two guys that are the greatest of all time in that spot as well, and two of the greatest scorers of all time, Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. When Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain had elimination games of the playoffs, they averaged 31.3 and 31.1 points. LeBron averages 33.5. Stats courtesy of the Ringer. Incredible. Last night, the Warriors once again rattled emotionally, mentally, physically. You have to worry if you're a Rockets fan about that injury to Chris Paul. But in terms of where this series sits right now, boy, the Rockets have rattled the cages of the Warriors. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4CBS. Toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Everybody, there's a quick way you could save money. Switching to Geico. Need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance too? Get it all. Geico.com. Mike is in Abilene, Texas, listening to 98.1 to CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, DA. Let me get that beam up, brother.
All right. Happy Friday. What's up, brother?
Happy Friday, my dude. You, sir, are notorious for spitting hot fire, and once again, here we are, melting. Draymond Green, thank you so much for telling the truth about him, the fake tough guy, the most overrated player in the history of the league. He's so soft and he's so weak, it's not even funny. Can't even handle Clint Capella. I want to talk about this series, though. You spit hot fire. The Warriors cannot handle any single type shred of diversity. I believe, first off, that this might be KD's, he's looking for the door. Anytime there's any adversity, what does he do? He wants his job to be easy. He doesn't want to work for it like everyone else in the league has to. He wants everything taken care of him, so his only job is to go out there and take a bunch of shots. The new Jordan, congratulations. Anyways, they're not going to be able to win this series if he doesn't show up in the fourth quarter. And correct me if I might be mistaken here. Isn't he supposed to be the second best player in the world, DA? Is that something we know?
That's what I've heard.
That's what I've heard. But where is he when his team needs him? I'm confused because the second best player in the world, if LeBron's the first and there's a second best, man, the second best must be pretty good, you know, must be able to contribute, must be able to lead their team in dire situations. But all I see from Kevin Durant is the Kevin Durant that bailed on his team when they were up 3-1 on the Warriors. It's funny to me. The second greatest player in the world is a coward and doesn't show up in the fourth quarter. If LeBron James had performed like Kevin Durant has been performing in the fourth quarter, they would crucify him across this entire world. But no, because it's not LeBron James, it's Kevin Durant. We give him some kind of pass. It's this, it's that. We don't, no one wants to talk about he's got the greatest shooter of all time, the most underrated, underappreciated player in Klay Thompson of all time, a great head coach, and again, like you said, zero diversity. Why does this young generation not want adversity? You just want it easy. You just want to walk up to the podium, take your trophy, and go have a seat. You don't want to work for it. That's why, to me, the gap between LeBron James and everybody else is from here a trip around the world. KD, you're not even close, bro. You can't lick the dust off the dirt off the slippers of my house shoes. Thanks, DA. Have a good one.
All right. Look, Kevin Durant has been bad in the last two fourth quarters. In these two losses, he's been not mediocre, not somewhat productive. He's been flat bad. And he looks totally out of sorts. He looks totally rattled. He looks out of his comfort zone. And that is totally true. I mean, I just rattled off the stats for what happens when LeBron faces elimination. He averages 33 points a game. I realize the Warriors haven't faced elimination these last 2 days, but Kevin Durant specifically has this reputation for, let's face it, not being able to be the type A alpha male when it matters. He was last year in the NBA Finals, but was also surrounded by the greatest supporting cast, arguably, of all time in doing so, and they never trailed in that series, so it was somewhat easier. Steven's next up. He's in Northern California, listening to 96.1 of CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning, DA. I get to listen to you every time that I'm on my way to work. Never catch the full show, but first time calling in, so can I get on the mothership?
Absolutely, buddy. Thanks for doing it, man. What's going on?
Hey, listen, that last call, you gotta say, it was hard to hear because I'm a big Warriors fan. Been a big Steph Curry fan since his days back in Davidson. And I couldn't disagree more with the last call. I was actually calling because I really agree with what you were saying. I don't think this is a matter of lack of devotion. I mean, if you're going to be an NBA player, you have devotion. It may not mean that you can live up to the LeBron Jameses of the world, but I don't think Kevin Durant is an alpha guy. I mean, he's got skills, but I think that Kevin works best when he's around a great supporting cast. And the Warriors, I don't think, are built for a specific player to rise up. They work as a team unit. But back to just what you were saying, man, I wish that people didn't know this about the Warriors, but they are strongest and they are their best because I think you're right. Their adversity hasn't been very high, and they really feed off of each other's confidence. I think it's the reason why you can see a young player come in and in the early season throw a ball off the backboard and dunk it. The Warriors are built on their confidence, and as teams are starting to probably break this down as the Rockets are, when you get into that chink of our armor, that's when you start to pull us out. And I was really concerned about last night because the Warriors or the Rockets, they didn't let the confidence of Golden State beat them. They said, hey, in these minutes, I think it was the end of the second quarter in game five, or in game four, where they just kept pummeling them. And it was in that moment, because if they're able to hang for that long, and if they're able to hit in those key moments, you got a real competitor. And I think you're spot on, though. It's going to be a tough challenge emotionally for the Warriors to do what they need to do to close out the series.
Appreciate the phone call, Steve. Good job, man. Confidence, confidence, confidence about the Warriors. You just hit the nail on the head. When they have it and they're feeling good, they're nearly unbeatable. Maybe they are unbeatable. When it's taken away from them, like superpowers, they don't know what to do. And that's what's happening right now. They do not have that confidence in the fourth quarter. And you've got to credit the Rockets for taking away that superpower and making them look so mortal. It's crazy to watch. When we come back here on the show, we'll get back into the NBA playoffs. Last night, a huge Game 5 victory by the Houston Rockets, but also dealing with what comes next for Chris Paul. And we'll discuss the Indy 500 with one of the members of the first family of racing, John Andretti. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
DA, beam me up. Ah, finally on the mothership. I love your show, man.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Glad you're with us. A happy Target Demo Friday to you, everybody. We want to know what you're doing as you listen to the show, where you're at as you listen to the show, and what you got cooking this weekend. So hit us up on either Facebook or Twitter. Facebook.com/TheDA Show or Twitter DA on CBS. And remember that we are on Sirius XM Radio, so if your local affiliate doesn't carry us, shame on them, but that's okay. Also, you can find us at Sirius XM 206. Again, that's Sirius XM 206 if you're on the go or outside your normal listening area. Coming up on Sunday, the Indy 500, the Great American Race coming up on Memorial Day weekend, as always. And a guy that comes from a family, a legacy, a lineage that knows this race oh so well. I know plenty of you are talking about the NBA playoffs, and we have to this point in time over the course of this first hour of the show. We'll get right back in there. But the Indy 500, always such a cool American sports event. Joining us here on the show is race car driver and a great story to boot, which we will talk about, John Andretti. John, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, DA. This is a race fan, race driver, race whatever dream. You know, it's the end of May. There's a race spectacular. It's kind of if you love racing, this is your weekend.
What is your earliest memory as an Andretti of the Indy 500?
Actually, it was really young. I just read an article where they asked my cousin Michael the same thing, and his memory is sort of mine. Is they got us these little racing uniforms, and there's a picture of my brother. I have an older brother, Mark, and then Michael, and then his younger brother, Jeff, and we're all in our racing suits, and we're standing there, you know, thinking that we're pretty cool. And if you look actually behind us, you can see my sister. But they always crop my sister. Actually, the picture has her in it, but they always crop her out, and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway actually sells that photo in their gift shop, and that's sort of the first time we were there. But we used to hang out in ironically the snake pit when it was a little cleaner than what it, and then they took it away, and now the snake pit has been brought back again, but it's nowhere near like it used to be at one point. They used to burn vehicles and all kinds of things down in there. Now it's much more tame, as you can imagine, in today's environment.
Obviously, you have all of the lineage. You're the nephew of Mario Andretti. And as you mentioned, kind of all of these cousins and all of these family members that are involved in racing. Was it like when you were young, everybody kind of racing in the backyard or the driveway or a dirt track? I mean, you know, I could imagine you guys in Hot Wheels. Was it all bicycles in the schoolyard? Were you guys always competing and racing against each other?
I would just say competing in general. It doesn't matter if the guys would compete, whether it was bikes or, you know, like you said, Hot Wheels, push them around the floor or doing anything. And then and in sports. And then, you know, I have sisters that I compete heavily with on, you know, in academia and things like that. So we're a very competitive family. My kids are the same way. They're, you know, everything is driven by competition and beating somebody. And I love that because, you know, it's not in a world of equals. You know, it's separating yourself from the crowd and trying to be always better. And so it's it doesn't matter if it's racing or outside of racing. We don't like to lose at a game of cards, and it doesn't matter if the money's involved or not. It's just a matter of losing. So you can imagine when our family gets together, it's pretty aggressive.
I could imagine. Yeah, I could imagine. John Andretti joins us this morning here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. So it's amazing because not only, obviously, have you had a career and a life in race car driving, but also you are battling colon cancer and stage 4 right now, but not currently in treatment, which I would imagine is a good thing. And the way that you were diagnosed and when you were diagnosed is not so long ago, just January of last year, 2017. How are you right now? How are you feeling right now? And where's your health at?
Well, you have all the facts right. And yeah, it was one of those things where I should have gotten a colonoscopy when I was 50. And I was 53, and my wife was going in for her. She has to go in routinely every 3 years because of gluten is a big deal these days. But 20 years ago, nobody knew what it was, but she's allergic to it. And so I just scheduled my colonoscopy then. And they found cancer in my colon, and since then it spread to my liver. And you know, actually as of right now, things are... we thought we're progressing well. Unfortunately, they're not. And so, but we're continuing to fight, and we're going to fight till the end.
What does that take mentally for you to just focus on fighting and being as courageous as you can? How do you approach that daily?
Oh, it's tough. It's a different kind of challenge because you're fighting something that is, you know, you can't see, you can't see your competitor. You can't intimidate your competitor. You can't outthink your competitor in so many ways. In this case, you're trying to kill your competitor and before it does you. And so it's a very, you know, different kind of battle, but it's not also far from what we did every other day, where you look at it and you say, okay, here's the challenge and what's the best path we're going to take to try to win. And in this case, winning is there's a big difference between winning and losing. There is, you know, before it can be just, it's a race, you ran second, you know, and now it's, you know, there is no second place. So it catches you for sure. But that's why I'm out there really pushing people hard to get screened. And fortunately, I've had a lot of people respond, and including my little sister, who had five or six precancerous polyps at the age of 42. And so, you know, fortunately, I think that we are making a difference and making a difference in a big way with people going in. And I get yelled at by some men that their wife pushed him in because of me, and, you know, if he can do it, you should do it. And, you know, he's healthy. He was an athlete, and you're not. And, you know, so there's a chance he could be in, you know, have an issue. So there is always an upside to it, and that is the upside. And we are very strong in our faith, and people praying for us has been a huge help for us and turning to God. So, you know, our lives are in his hands, so we're doing all we can with what we have.
John Andretti joined us this morning here on the show. I know that we have listeners that have battled cancer, other illnesses, are battling those same things, have family members battling those same things, or have gone through this. Just as somebody I'm sure that they're listening to going, boy, he's speaking my language, what can you tell them to relate to them? How, maybe, is the best way you would approach it or do approach it, or advice to those that have gone through something like this?
Well, certainly cancer is, you know, there are different stages of cancer, as you mentioned, and certainly different levels that you're at. Some are obviously much more severe than others. And, you know, that changed the path of your life. You become in treatment all the time. You're at doctors all the time. Your life is now not your own. And it's a lot different than, you know, people come up and they say, well, I have cancer and I made it. And, you know, stage one, stage two is a whole lot different than stage three or four, obviously. And so that in itself, you know, people are certainly trying to be encouraging. To me, I think the biggest thing is that you have to, I didn't want to tell anybody that it happened because I didn't want people looking at me and the first thing thinking cancer and, you know, feeling sorry for me or whatever. And the only reason I did go public was to hopefully help others. And I was kind of pushed along to do it. And I created a strategy where I said I was going to have five people go in. And if I can talk these five people of going in, they're going to be difficult ones, then I'll go public. But if I can't talk them, I can't talk people that I don't know into going in and being screened. And within 2 weeks, all five of them either had been screened or were scheduled. So we felt like it was important to get out there and spread the word. I think the hardest thing to do is to, because it does change your life, is let it change your life. Try to keep pushing along as hard as you can and being as normal as a life as you can. And there's been days that I've been at the racetrack and actually had the key and was getting chemo because I had to carry it with me. And I'm at the racetrack with it. So, you know, and nobody knew it. You just keep pushing along. I knew that those were going to be okay days, and the days to follow were going to be a little tougher. So, you know, I'd go off and hide in those days and nobody would know the difference except for my family. So I think that's the big thing. It's just keep your mind healthy and keep your mind moving, and hopefully the rest of your body listens and follows.
Does it help to make it a competition? You talked about how you grew up in a competitive family, that you guys were competing against one another all the time, and you labeled cancer as your competitor, and you're trying to beat your competitor. Does it help you to frame it in sports and athletics and competition?
It does, and actually now I have my entire family and friends and fans, and it seems like everybody that's been involved in motorsports and outside of motorsports in such a big way because of social media, that I have them fighting this competitor with me. They're on my team, and so to speak, and anything they can do to help, and they do help in different ways. Some of the things they say, some of the things they do, obviously, but even some of the things they can help with otherwise. And so it's not your own, and that's the other thing that hurts with cancer is that it's not your own battle, is that it spreads to everybody else and it hurts everybody else too. And that's the thing that probably is the biggest challenge for me is that if I dealt with this and it was only my own, then that's one thing. But obviously the people around me that, you know, that love me, it affects them deeply. And so that hurts me a lot.
John Andretti joining us here on the show. He is advocating getting screened. And so can you tell people what they can do, how to stay aware, and how to get screened?
Absolutely. If you're 50 years or older, and the reason why that age is there is because that's set by the insurance companies. And if you're 50 or older and you have insurance, you can go and get a colonoscopy, and that is the trigger point. If you actually have a family history, you can go sooner. It's typically a 10-year gap, and so me being diagnosed at 53, my children should be able to go at 43. My kids are actually going to start at 25, and which means that if they don't have any issues, I'll be paying for it, which is fine with me. And but just having the history in our family, that's how serious it is to me now to make sure that no one in my family, that this ever attacks again, because unfortunately, my wife's family, she's lost two brothers and a mother to this disease, and you know, obviously, I'm fighting that battle now. So, I don't want to see anybody close to me, and it will hurt me deeply if they don't get screened, because the people around them that count on them are the ones that really suffer the most. And so just please go out and get screened. It's really an easy process. Don't let all this prep and all the other things that people have all made fun of and all the other things, it's so easy. You're going to get out and go, that was such an easy process. And you actually get a good little sleep during it. The drug they give you is put you right under and you come right out of it. It took me 18 minutes. My last colonoscopy, which was February, it was 18 minutes from the time they rolled me out of the room till I got dressed to walk out. Hmm. And so, but I always push things hard because I want to beat the record of everything. So, that's probably the record. I was pushing the doctors along. But,
you are a speed demon there, John Andretti, a speed demon in every way, shape, and form. Thank you so much for the touching and powerful and important story. We'll discuss further and the NBA playoffs, all of that coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.